Well, good evening. So, I wonder what your mind training was like this week. You're whipping yourself into shape, or... No, that's the thing. It's not about that. at all. It's called training the mind. That's a somewhat clumsy way of talking about this process. We're offering ourselves to a process, which we've already done by bringing ourselves to the cushion in this way. Or, if you like, having been brought to the cushion this way. All of these things are about subduing all of these different suggestions, really, or sometimes I think of them as goads, the way you push a cow along or kick a horse along, or that there's something about the slow stubbornness of human nature, certainly my human nature, that needs a goad now and then, which feels like help. There's so many times we get stuck. And these are all unsticking process. So we did number 14 last time, which sounds like this: seeing confusion as the four kayas is unsurpassable shunyata protection. So what it's saying is that however we feel, especially the negative feelings of bewilderment and chaos, that there isn't anywhere to go about it. He says they have no origin, no cessation, and nowhere to dwell. Knowing that is our best protection. There is nowhere to dwell. It's called being suspended in emptiness. So I know we run into chaos and confusion and bewilderment many times all during the week, and this is about how we, what kind of mind we meet our problems with. The more we believe in ourself as a solid being that needs protection, the less protection we offer ourselves. Once we realize there's nothing to protect, then we're protected. So, So has anything come to you about this? Life in Silicon Valley? Life in the burbs?
Why do you have to protect emptiness? Isn't that what the slogan says, that you're protecting emptiness?
No, that isn't what it says. It says, that because we're suspended in emptiness, that there is nothing to fear. It's the same thing as the Heart Sutra, depend on Prajnaparamita, and mind is no hindrance. That we create the chaos, we create the bewilderment ourselves, based on a belief that there's some solid being here that can be, is being damaged, or at least is in danger. But once you realize, it's like we used to do in the schoolyard, you know, you can't hurt me. There's nothing to hurt. Sticks and stones. How does it go? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. It's that kind of attitude.
I mean, it seems simple when I look at it in a simple way, but then talking about not fearing, so it's like you put yourself on a black diamond. If you haven't gone through the blue and the greens and you're on the black diamond, you are going to get hurt unless the Holy Spirit comes and just teaches you how to ski down the hill. I mean, I know that's what we're talking about.
Well, yes, we are. Yeah, sure we are.
It's like we just say, oh, well, I can do it. I'm not going to fear this. And sometimes it seems like things take care of themselves, and you, oh, I think I got it, and then boom. Like, where did all the practice go? And, you know, you're shaken.
Yes.
So you're always living. When is it going to happen?
Well, that's number 15, or number 16, the next one that we're talking about, that we're shaken. And instead of running away from it, we are very grateful for it because it wakes us up.
Yes.
So if we find ourselves on the black diamond, which I did once, and you're not prepared for it, you go down on your butt. Right, exactly.
Could you go help?
Yes.
I guess that happens.
Yes, it does. In many different ways. It's happening to us all the time. And if we keep thinking, oh, this is, I can't do it. This is too much for me, is saying, look at the great me. You know, this me that I am so certain I know what it is, isn't really that at all. It can handle the black diamond. It does. And if it means the end of the life of us, that's handling it too. So it's the state of mind that we bring to whatever happens to us. Kisayo.
I'm wondering if we should be moving one step at a time.
We do move one step at a time. Yes.
We are moving too fast for me.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I had to overcome, I don't know, I had to practice, train my mind. Seems like going back to like a brain calm. Bring all the blame into one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like, if I can really do it or tell a child who is bullied at school that, or somebody who is really suffering, and do we have to be strong enough first to do it? That's my question. It seems like I'm not sure I can really practice. Sorry.
That's a wonderful question. You can't do it all by yourself. We can't do any of it by ourselves. But we're all along. If we put ourselves in that place, that courageous place, because you're right, it takes all the courage that we can find in us, that we're not alone. And we're carried, and we discover that over and over, that once we try, even though we aren't sure, just trying makes the thing work. It's mysterious in a way. It's like trying to grow something. We have to trust it. Trust that we can do it as best we can. So being bullied in school, for instance, that's a very big question, and how to deal with that. But this is an answer. But it takes support from all different directions in order for it to work, which is why we hang together. We live together and help and support each other. Number 15 gives advice on how to do this in our daily life. In four different suggestions, I guess you could say, best methods. When you first read them, they seem a little odd. The first is accumulating merit. And usually we say merit, it's pretty hard to know what that is. Are we gaining points? Are we getting ahead of the game if we gain merits and do the right thing. But it's not about that. The second one is laying down evil deeds. So that sounds pretty scary, laying down evil deeds. The third one is about something we don't even know about in this country, which is called offering to the dons. And the fourth is offering to the Dharmapalas. So, essentially, this is about our, what Shogyam calls our neuroses. It's not any big time messiness about ourself. Evil is a pretty powerful word for what he's talking about, except in the absolute sense. But neurosis, the places we go that are not wholesome, the selfish places, the fantasies, the places that carry us off the track, the unconscious, but very obvious ways that we have of being with certain people. There are many different ways of addressing our neuroses. But accumulating merit is about what he calls emptying the bowl. And he gives three different little prayers that sound like this. Grant, it doesn't say to whom, it just says, grant your blessing if it is better for me to be sick. Grant your blessing if it is better for me to live. Grant your blessing if it is better for me to be dead. So this is very different. This is about gratitude for whatever is happening. And it's about accepting it. Any of these things are true for us, or will be true for us. We can't avoid it. And so if we have the ability to say something like this, in Christian terms, we'd say, thy will be done. This is it, and this is it. Thy will be done. So, you're letting go of owning anything, of holding anything, and allowing all of it to be as it is. And essentially, it's letting go of resistance, of holding back. There's always that place in us that's not quite forthcoming. I always keep a little bit of myself secret and separate. And although it seems strange, that also is a source of our suffering. So after that, is number two, which is the evil deeds part, which he calls neurotic crimes. And he says the best way of laying them down is to really pay attention until you get sick and tired of your neuroses, of your neurotic crimes, so-called. The silly, foolish things that we do and think. And look back on what we do, and then take refuge. And try to get rid of hope and fear. Drop hope and fear. So, once hope and fear are gone, we're back to the same place we were talking about before. So we can lay down, as we get to know ourselves, lay down the things that really bug us, and become a little more sane, a little more gentle, a little more kind. The third one is making offerings to the Dons. And what they do in Tibet is make little figures out of butter and flour. Beautiful little, and they dye them colors and mold them in beautiful shapes of flowers, and then make them as an offering for the ghosts who create misfortune. So this is a part that's like the hungry ghost practice that we have in October, when we feed the hungry ghosts. Feeding those who are creating our misfortune, in this sense, inviting them back, and expressing our gratitude, because even though they're a trouble for us, they wake us up. So we invite them and feed them, those things that are such a trouble to us. And then the fourth part is making offerings to the Dharmapalas, the protectors of the teachings. So this is assuming, as we do in Zen, that everything that we meet is a form of Avalokiteshvara. Everything that we meet in our everyday life is some form of compassion, which in some way is helping us, is our teacher, or protectors of the teaching. Whatever helps us is protecting the teaching. He calls our hidden neuroses bloodthirsty subconscious gossip. So, you wonder what it is, that's what it is. And gentleness cuts through it. So he says, we are asking the protectors to give us help and feedback through teachings, through bankruptcies, through organizational mishaps, through being millionaires, or through work in general, it is all included. We are taking a lot of chances here. We are not physically taking chances as much as we are taking spiritual chances. That seems to be the basic point of what we're doing. And giving offerings to the Dharmapalas is what we've been told to do, according to this commentary. So he says, for the accumulating merit, that a sense of veneration is very important, and maybe that's the most important part of this whole slogan. And that these four practices are about that, to find this spiritual goodness in the badness that happens to us. To find a way to see through the badness that happens to us as not what we think it is, as our teachers, to see them as our teachers, as our benefactors, as what best gets us through our day, our year, our life. Recognizing it's not easy, and recognizing it needs deep respect and honor for what happens. So this will be fun to take home and consider for a week. Can you imagine how to do that? Yeah, it is. That's a good idea.
What's the main thing that they're for?
It's the four practices that make the best of our life. So essentially, it's about dealing with misfortune. So accumulating merit and the misfortune of our own mind, our own neurosis, and the beings that create the misfortunes of us. So it's all about, and then the protectors that we have to hold us and keep us as we undergo what is difficult. Samia?
You said something about hope and
fear.
And I remember a long time ago you talked about hope, that it wasn't a great word. And I'm wondering, my text and email, I hope you're having a good day. It's like, what other word can you use again? from a Christian background, it's a lovely word.
Yes.
Like a quick refresher course
in
half a sentence or so, another word for hope.
I think the reason we don't use the word hope, or at least that's the suggestion, is that the very idea is a mistake. That if we try to wish for something in the future, something good in the future, that we're projecting into the future what we can't possibly know. So it's creating a false sense of reality. We don't know what's going to happen, and though we can wish someone well,
so it's not the same like wishing?
It's you can wish someone well, or you can hope someone does better, but to hope for your own, well, even so.
Yeah, in the Christian realm, it's putting the burden in your hand, almost letting go of it. That's my understanding of it. So it's, to me, it's a good thing. But if I don't want to be ignorant about it either.
Well, that's not that. So, in the Christian terms, you carry the wish?
No, you give it up.
Oh, you give it up.
So, you know, she's sick, and I'm worried about her.
Mm.
So my hopes are, and concerns are, being put in somebody's hands that are bigger than mine.
I see.
Almost giving it up.
I see.
Which I think is a very powerful thing to do, rather than I'm going to make you better.
Right. There should be a better way of saying that. See, what you just said is more vivid and more accurate.
Just thinking of the word faith, we don't talk about it a lot. Buddhism, every time we do our vows, it's way more about faith than hope.
That's right.
I had
right.
a real problem with hope early on, because you know I always hoped that something would be different than it is. But that's like an oxymoron of what our practice is.
Yeah.
So I have to look at it, but giving it up to something bigger. Faith in ourselves, faith in
the whole process.
Together.
Yes. Yes.
How do you see faith? Do you kind of see it in that context?
I think so. I think faith is what we use instead of hope, which is the same thing Soumya is saying. Which is a kind of surrender. Ellie?
I'm just thinking about this, and I was thinking about this when you were talking, that the expression, be careful what you hope for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I think that what I was getting when you were talking about hope was something like that, is that we might envision what we think would be a good solution to some that our situation or somebody's, but we don't know. Who are we to say what would be best? It's kind of that me thing again. Yes, we feel terrible when someone is sick and when they die, and I don't see any way to put a nice sugar coating on that and say, oh, well, it was for the best. But still, who are we to say that it was or wasn't the right thing? It just seems so arrogant, I guess. So all I'm saying is that I get the thread that maybe that kind of hope is really sort of like you saying you're going to make your friend better, but just make it be a certain way is kind of a controlling thing, rather than a trust or a faith or a what you said, you know, about the bigger hands. I mean, that's so beautiful. But we, of course, want a good outcome, but we also have to trust that life will there'll be some kind of power that will determine it other than our own wishes.
Yeah. Thank you. The John?
I was just thinking that when I heard you talking about that, the thing that came to my mind is the phrase that I have every day, which is in the Metta Sutta, which is, may all beings be happy, may they be joyous and live in safety. And to me, may is kind of the same thing as hope.
Mm-hmm.
We have a desire or a wish that's out of an open heart and a compassion for well-being instead of, I hope I get that job, I hope I get that raise. I'm not so sure there's, you know, it's, maybe it's semantics, but that came to my mind in the same way, maybe, as the sending and receiving. I sort of was feeling mm-hmm. as I was doing that the last few weeks, sort of driving or sitting or whatever, and sort of pulling in, you know, may I take whatever is suffering and give back well-being to all things.
Mm-hmm.
And whether we want to use the word hope or desire or wish, I think it's got, at least for me, it's got spirit rather than necessarily a specific word that defines it.
Yes. Thank you. It's what those three statements are. Does it grant your blessing if it is better for me to be sick?
Mm-hmm.
And we could say that for anybody else, too. So that it's not our own doing anymore. It's the whole thing. Yeah. Well, it's after 8:00.